Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose McKinney & Evans. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks so much for joining us this week. On today's podcast, we'll hear from Eric Steenstra, president of Vote Hemp, a political advocacy organization that he co-founded in 2000 and a leader in the hemp industry. Also on the program this week, we'll hear from Michelle Linus, program assistant for the Midwest Hemp Council, as well as founder and secretary treasurer of the Indiana Farmers Union Hemp Chapter. Michelle will get us up to date on the upcoming field days, as well as the Hemp at the Crossroads Education and Trade Show in November. But first, our featured guest this week is a true pioneer in the hemp industry. Eric Steenstra has been involved from the beginning, leading the effort to pass hemp farming legislation nationwide starting back in 2005, when he worked with Congressman Ron Paul of Texas to draft the very first U.S. hemp legislation with H.R. 3037. Eric was also the founding member of the Hemp Industries Association and served as executive director from 2008 to 2016. Eric, I know that just scratches the surface of your hemp advocacy over the past couple of decades, but hopefully we'll get to more of your accomplishments here this afternoon. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us this week.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, Jason.
Well, many in the know would call you the key to the foundation of the hemp industry here. So let's start with what got you interested in hemp in the first place, and way back in, I guess this would have been about either 2000 or before 2005, or excuse me, before 2000. What was your purpose? What was your interest in hemp at that time?
Yeah, I originally got interested in hemp. I met someone in the, I live in the Washington, D.C. area, and I met a guy named Steve D'Angelo, and he shared Jack Herer's book with me, The Emperor Wears No Clothes. And that was the sort of, you know, my first real interest. I mean, I really didn't know anything about hemp, and he shared it with me. We started talking about it, and he and I both felt that there was a, you know, a future in it and that business opportunities. And so we co-founded a clothing company in 1992 called Ecolution. And we sourced hemp materials out of Eastern Europe, Hungary and Romania, and developed a line of clothing, including jeans and shirts and accessories items, and then started selling those. And so that's, I originally got into it through the business, and you know, we had that business and grew it over, you know, 5-6 year period, saw that there was, you know, that we were right, that there was a demand for it. There was a lot of interest in, you know, people wanted to do more sustainable clothing and saw hemp as a good alternative for that.
Now, was that his purpose in passing the book along to you, or how did it go from reading this book into, hey, let's start an industry?
Well, yeah, I mean, we weren't the only ones that had, you know, had caught on to this. There were some other people that had started out before we had. So we had some, you know, there were some companies like the Hempstead Company and Ohio Hempery and a few others that were already doing it. So I think we had a little bit of, a little bit of help in sort of seeing that there was a business opportunity there. And and that combined with sort of Jack's vision that, hemp had so much potential, you know, food, fiber, fuel, the whole thing. And so we just really felt like, it was a good, something we could do something positive, you know, and working with cannabis, working with hemp, and do something positive for the planet in terms of, you know, having a more sustainable material. And, when you compare hemp to cotton, it's a big improvement.
Well, Eric, you've been involved in getting a lot of legislation passed, which is never a quick or easy battle. But again, this goes all the way back to 2000. And in 2005, when you did work with Congressman Ron Paul of Texas to draft what I guess is the very first U.S. hemp legislation in modern times, did you think it would take this long to make it happen? Or did you think it would have maybe been sooner? Or did you just think it might have been a complete long shot in the first place?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know if we ever would have started if we had realized how long it was going to take us to get to the point where it was legal again. So the answer was, I think we thought maybe 5 or 6 years would be sort of, you know, what it would take. And as we got further into it, we realized what a challenge it was. It took us, most of 4 years just to get the first federal legislation introduced. And, and it was just a slow process, basically educating, going up to the Capitol Hill, meeting with, you know, offices and staff people and explaining to them what hemp was and what it wasn't, because there was a lot of misconceptions, a lot of people either thought of, just rope or marijuana or something when you said the word hemp, and showing them that there was economic opportunity. That was our, the message we crafted and really focused in on, just trying to explain that there were, a lot of companies working with it, but are we having to import it all? And that's kind of what led us into this in the first place, was, why are we importing this when we could be growing it here?
And then almost 10 years later, you were working with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky on hemp legislation that was eventually included in the 2014 Farm Bill. How much was Mitch involved in the actual legislation? I mean, was he in there with you kind of getting down and dirty with it, or did he just basically sign it as you guys put the information out there?
Well, he played, Senator McConnell played a critical role in 2014 in getting the amendment there into the Farm Bill that ultimately led to that pilot programs and research. But maybe if I can back up just a step before that, I want to give a lot of credit to some other leaders too. In the Senate, the first person that really took leadership role on that was Senator Ron Wyden. He had co-sponsored legislation. He was the first senator to put in legislation in 2012 and had pushed to try to get an amendment into the Senate version of the Farm Bill. And then also James Comer, who was at that time the agriculture commissioner in Kentucky, and he had pushed, when he had gotten elected, it's an elected position there in Kentucky, he'd gotten elected on a platform primarily of legalizing hemp and bringing hemp farming back in Kentucky. And I think that made a lot of people in Kentucky, including Senator McConnell, take a second look at this and say, well, hey, what's going on here? Comer won by 20 points, and he was the only Republican to win that year. So I think there were, some people said, hey, what's going on here? And it took a closer look at it, and I think McConnell recognized that there was potential and saw what Comer was doing was good. So, but he, and then also Jared Polis. So Jared Polis was a congressman from Colorado, and he put an amendment in on the House side to the 2014 Farm Bill. And that amendment essentially said that universities could do research on hemp. And that was the first vote we had on the floor of either body. And we were lucky. We got 225 votes. You need 218 to pass it. So The work had paid off. All that time that we had been working on it, educating, we had enough people there to vote on it. And it was a really nice bipartisan vote, too. We had 162 Democrats and 63 Republicans come together on that. So there were a lot of people that came to, that made this happen and really that opened the door for the industry.
Well, now you started Vote Hemp way back, and I believe if I have my facts correct, back in 2000, you co-founded Vote Hemp. You've still got it going. Obviously, it was a very vital part in making all of this happen and work with those legislators and get them involved and mainly educate them on what this meant to farmers in their states and their regions. But Vote Hemp is certainly still going very strong here in 2019.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, this is, our original goal was to see the law changed, but we're shifting our stance a little bit to try to support the growth of the industry and ensure that it's successful now that the law has been passed. There's still a lot of work left to do. There's a number of states that just passed legislation for the first time this year to bring themselves on board. There's a few states left that haven't gotten on board with this. And then there's a lot of a lot of things that need to happen at the federal level to ensure that the industry can be successful. We're still facing a lot of challenges. We're waiting for USDA regulations to come out, hopeful that those will be, really positive and helpful for the industry. We're waiting on the FDA. The FDA has been an impediment for, especially for a lot of these tinctures and supplements that are coming out from the featuring CBD. So I think that there's still a lot of work left to do to make sure that this industry can be successful.
All right. Once again, we're speaking with Eric Steenstra with Vote Hemp and many other organizations. Now, Eric, you also founded the HIA, which, of course, here in Indiana, we have the IHIA. Again, one of the early organizations that you founded there, and really it took hold, and a lot of people picked up on it from across the country and founded state chapters as well. Talk about the success of the HIA.
Sure. Yeah. I was one of the founding members, but I wasn't, the sole, it wasn't just my thing. There were probably 40 or 50 companies at that time that were working in the industry. And there was, a lot of us had some of the similar challenges in marketing the product and sourcing it, that type of thing. And so there was, in any case, some people suggested we ought to have a meeting. We met in Scottsdale, Arizona in 1994. And, a bunch of these companies all came together and we agreed that we had common interests and it was important to start a trade group. And that was the basis for the Hemp Industries Association. So I was a member for a few years, then I served on the board. And then later by 2008, I ended up becoming the executive director. And I did that for about 8 years. And the HIA did a lot of important work, defending, for example, one thing that happened in 2001, the Drug Enforcement Administration came out with regulations sort of out of nowhere that they were going to basically ban, make illegal any product that contained any THC. Now, THC is tetrahydrocannabinol. That's the sort of euphoric compound or, the thing that gets you high in marijuana. The way the rule was written, even if it had such a tiny amount that there was no impact, in other words, a few parts per billion or million, trace amounts of that compound on it, which some of the seed products, the food products had in it, really tiny amounts, not that would infect you, but that was measurable, that those would then be illegal. And so we helped coordinate a lawsuit with a number of the companies that were involved in the industry and sued the DEA, and we got an injunction and then won ultimately in federal court. And that helped to launch, the industry in a big way. We got a lot of publicity around that. And I think a lot of, a lot more people started buying hemp foods after that time. And this was all before CBD had really been, nobody had really been marketing CBD in, 2001 or anything like that. So the industry was all based on fiber and food at that time. So CBD has been a huge expansion sort of the potential. And honestly, there's more to it than just CBD, even though, generally there's a lot of cannabinoids in the plant and hemp has some potential to play a big role in that. So, but the HIA has been, an important organization and, it's a lot of good things happened and it brought a lot of people together within the industry to, collaborate.
Well, I think a lot of credibility was added to the hemp industry when organizations like, for instance, Purdue University became involved and other universities. When did you first start working with Purdue University?
Well, I have to say, first off, to give some credit where it's due, you mentioned the Indiana chapter of the HIA, and Jamie Campbell reached out to us and became a member of the HIA and reached out and said she wanted to start a chapter and make something happen in Indiana and was really an early leader there and has pushed so hard for so long to try to open up the industry in Indiana. And the work that honestly I have been to Purdue and I've seen their field days and communicated with some of their staff, but I have to give a lot more credit, say, to somebody like Jamie, who's really worked with Purdue. Whereas, I'm familiar with their work, but I wouldn't say that I've really worked with them. So, Jamie has just done an amazing job there in making sure that Indiana was included in this industry and that Purdue got, excited about the potential of this crop. And I think they're obviously going to play a really important role, going forward in helping us, figure out what the potential is for hemp, because I think there's a lot yet that we haven't, we haven't been able to research or, work with this crop until just recently. So if you think about, all the potential, and I already see a few developments coming from some research that started to happen. So I think, Indiana could be a really big player in the industry here.
Well, again, when you talk about you getting started in the industry back in 2000, at what point did or did you see a obviously, I assume you saw a big pushback from, say, legislators, people that in authority. Was there a point where they started that you saw that they were starting to come around and accept it, or did they accept it from the beginning?
Yeah, you know, it was definitely a difficult process. It was typically, you know, we had to spend time educating, and there were some that were more skeptical than others. So some of them came on a little bit more quickly once we showed them, you know, hey, here's some of the products that can be made. Companies are importing this. Here's what the market potential is. You know, we focused on trying to, you know, get them data. You know, here's some numbers, right? Here's the size of the industry now, and this is all imported hemp. Why are we increasing our trade deficit, right? When we could grow this here historically, that was kind of the argument, right? But there was definitely some resistance. I mean, you know, a lot of folks, you know, even folks like Senator McConnell originally were not, you know, not supportive of hemp. But I think that, you know, that education process, eventually people started to take a look at it when they would see this in their state or whatever it was. And so it just took time. And, you know, I think that, you know, for the most part, there's very few people still trying to oppose this. I mean, I was kind of shocked. There's one interesting, you know, this governor in South Dakota is really convinced that hemp is a bad thing, wrote an op-ed recently in the Wall Street Journal. I was kind of shocked that at this point, with pretty much everybody across the political spectrum understanding what the potential of this crop is, and how it could help agriculture, and just seeing what it's already doing, that anybody would really be opposed to it. But there are still a few people left that haven't come on board.
Once again, Eric Steenstra, the founder of many organizations involving hemp, but the most recent, or the one you can find him immediately, is votehemp.com. And Eric, where else can folks get involved or actually get a hold of you, find out more about you? What's the easiest path they can take to do that on social media?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm on LinkedIn. That's a great place to connect. And certainly our website, as you mentioned, votehemp.com. You know, people can reach out through that. And we have a lot of great information there on the website. You know, we try to keep up with state laws and connect people with resources in those states and you know, put out the latest news that's happening and also some of our advocacy efforts. We have a bill now that's pending in Congress that we worked with Representative Gabbard from Hawaii on, called the Hemp for Victory Act, and we're pushing to try to get support for that. We've also made some comments to the FDA, and we're hopeful that the FDA will come out with a new, you know, a reasonable policy soon here to help clarify the sale of CBD products, and of course, been working with the USDA on their regulatory process. So, you know, those are some of the projects we worked on this year, but by all means, people can reach out to us through VoteHemp, you know, .com, or they can also connect with me on LinkedIn.
All right. And Eric, there is a rumor that you may be in attendance, or better yet, speaking in Indiana in November at the Hemp at the Crossroads Trade Show. Is that true?
I hope so. Yeah. I've had exchanged a couple of emails about that, and I hope to be there. I'd love to come back to Indiana and hear more about everything that's been happening. I've been kind of watching from a distance, seeing all the, you know, farmers finally getting to grow this, and Jamie's kept me up to date on some of the stuff. So I hope I will be there. I'd like to do that.
Well, we'd love to see you, and we certainly would welcome you in, Eric.
Absolutely. I'd love to do that. Thanks again for having me today.
All right. Next up on the program, Michelle Linus, Program Assistant for the Midwest Hemp Council, as well as founder and secretary treasurer of the Indiana Farmers Union Hemp Chapter. Michelle, so good to have you back on the program with us again.
Always happy to be back.
Well, and when you're here, we talk about all kinds of good, fun stuff, and so we'll get right to that. That would start this Saturday with the Hempcrete seminar coming up. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with that.
It does. We're really excited about this. It's the first time that we've held anything hempcrete focused within our organizations. I'm not going to say the first in the state because I don't know for sure if anybody else has done anything. But we have a opportunity where folks are going to be able to come out and actually create their own hempcrete block. They'll get a quick seminar from Rachel Berry out of Illinois. She is a certified hempcrete, I don't know if it's specialist or what the actual title is, but she's going to come over and lead the charge on explaining what hempcrete is, how you can work with it, how to create it, and then folks will actually get a hands-on experience and be able to take home a brick. That is, however, unfortunately, sold out. Fortunately and unfortunately, it is sold
out. Right, right. As are most of the field days and events, so when people see these and hear us talk about these early on, they need to jump on these. Is there a possibility that they may be able to do another hempcrete seminar?
So that's what we've kind of been throwing around the idea, because we have had a few people voice that they wish they could attend. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. we are at full capacity, but we need to hear from you. We'd love to put on another workshop. The opportunity is possible, but we need to know that people will attend too.
Right.
We'd hate to have Rachel come all the way back out and then have nobody sign up. So if you're interested in coming, let us know, reach out, tell us and show us your interest, and we'll do what we can to put on another one.
All right. And they can get information on the front page of the Midwest Hemp Council website. Go in and click that banner. It'll take you to that information. Again, as you said, Michelle, it is sold out, but people can get some good idea to go out there and get information and see what's happening in case there is another event that we're able to put on. And then the coming up next week, Dream Nutrition has an open house and networking night. That's on October 10th up in Rushaville.
Yeah, we're tag teaming on that. And I'm really excited about it. Dream wanted to do an open house, and we'd been knocking around the idea about having another networking night, which we've done in the past at Roosters and Centerpoint. So we just decided to put the two together. We'll do it up at Dream Nutrition's facility. They just hung all of their harvest, so it'll be an exciting experience to be able to come up, have some drinks. Chef Ski's going to put on some hors d'oeuvres. We plan to have some live acoustic music, so it'll be a good evening of networking and some visual experience on what's happening with harvest and drying.
All right. And again, that'll be in Rushaville coming up next week. And then we, as we move along the hemp. Now, oh, I'm sorry. Let me ask you this. Is that event sold out?
No, it's not, but it will. So I would highly recommend not waiting to the last minute. Get your tickets now. It's only $10. That covers your drinks, your appetizers, an admission for the evening. And yeah. We'd love for you to come out.
And well worth the trip. The guys up there at Dream Nutrition know what they're doing. So if you need a little education or information on what's going on, certainly talk to Austin and those guys up there at Dream Nutrition.
Absolutely.
All right. Then we move on to into November. I'm sure we're skipping some things here, and we'll go back. We'll backtrack here in a second just to make sure. But November 16th and 17th, a big to do, the Hemp at the Crossroads Education and Trade Show. That's at the Indianapolis Marriott East. Is there still time to get tickets for that?
Absolutely. We'll have time until it sells out. And there are plenty of tickets still available. We've got sponsorship and booth opportunities available as well. And we're happy to work with anybody if they would like to take advantage of that and maybe can't afford it at the moment or whatnot. Please reach out to us, because we're happy to work with you. We're really excited about this opportunity. And as I said before, we had a symposium back in March at Franklin College that was incredibly successful and incredibly overwhelming. So we learned really quick that we needed to expand that, not only the hours, but the days. So we're happy to provide a 2-day experience with a expo hall as well.
All right. And then one that I did pass up, members of the Midwest Hemp Council, Elite Health and Wellness. They've got a grand opening event coming up in a couple weeks, Saturday, October 19th. We'll get more information on that. That should be kind of fun. That's up in McCordsville, Indiana.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great team as well. They've got a shop in Mooresville that they've had open for approximately almost a year, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
quite a while.
I think they
might be coming up on their anniversary. Yeah, so they're opening up a second location. And I know their last grand opening was a pretty eventful experience. So this one, I'm sure, will be eventful as well.
Well, we've had the owner, Spencer, and also Ryan Rummel, who works up at the McCordsville location, on the podcast. So if you want to get more information about Elite Health and Wellness, you can find a couple podcasts with some information, as well as, of course, go to the Midwest Hemp Council website, and the banner is up there. You can get more information on that. Now, Michelle, the Midwest Hemp Council trying to stay on the cutting edge of technology and social networking, rolling out a new member-based software. At least we're hoping to roll this out sometime here in the next couple of months. What does that mean for anybody?
Yeah, we're really excited about that. We're kind of in the dark ages right now, working with Excel spreadsheets and email and PayPal. So
hey, but it's getting the job done. I guess the technology could make it a little easier maybe down the road.
Yeah. We need some streamlining and some up-to-date processes. So yeah, we're going to work with MemberClix and hopefully roll everything together and create some fluidity with the process of signing up for membership and then on our end for data management and reporting as well. So we're really excited about that. I know even today we had a member that had a little bit of a frustrating time trying to get some things situated away. So hopefully moving forward that will take all those gremlins out of the equation.
Well, it's a growing industry, a new industry. And of course there's going to be growing pains with a lot of companies and organizations involved. And, you know, but all you can do is just keep plowing ahead and moving forward like the Midwest Hemp Council is doing and hopefully benefiting everyone who comes into contact.
Yeah. And I want to emphasize that too. I mean, this just shows that we're growing. We're here to stay. We're here to help assisting everybody any way that we can. We're not going anywhere.
All right. Michelle Linus, Program Assistant for the Midwest Hemp Council, as well as Founder and Secretary Treasurer of the Indiana Farmers Union Hemp Chapter. You can find them on Facebook as well. Everybody's got these long, blown up, and I'm just the podcast guy.
It's okay. I have trouble myself saying my own title.
How do you get that on a business card?
Exactly. Yeah, I don't.
There we go. Well, Michelle, is there anything that else that we need to touch on?
Not at the moment, but I mean, keep checking back. We've got other potential events in the works that we're going to be releasing pretty soon. We don't have anything definite, so I can't really speak to the particulars on those yet, but stay with us. Watch our Facebook, watch our website, and keep in contact.
All right, Michelle, thanks. And we do look forward to talking to you again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jason.
And that's going to do it for our show this week. The Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast is brought to you by the Bowes Public Affairs Group at Bowes, McKinney & Evans. I'm your host, Jason Dozier, and we'll see you next week, everybody.